Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, actor, writer, producer, agent, everyman, right, Sam? And you're listening to me now on talk radio network stations around the country. And also, we are broadcasting from our flagship studio here at TalkingAlternative.com. Back in the studio after being on vacation for the last few weeks, for those people who are listening in either on TalkingAlternative.com or on talk radio network stations, you are listening to reruns. I'm sure you kind of grasped that concept about 5 minutes into each conversation, but hey, man, I'm back, man. I'm rejuvenated. I'm revitalized, and we got a lot of cover today from the lion being killed in Africa. I want to talk about that, the wreckage that has been discovered in the last few days here that may be from the missing Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. We're going to talk about Ronda Rousey and UFC 190 fight last night here as we're taping the show, but 34-second bout that was more, it ended up being more hype than anything else. But we got a wide range of things that I want to talk about today. But first, before we dive too far into it, today's show is sponsored by one of our great friends at Wise Food Storage and wisefoodstorage.com. Are you prepared for the unknown? How would you feed your family in a major disaster such as a tornado, earthquake, or hurricane, or even a personal emergency such as a power outage or job loss? The world is an increasingly unstable and unpredictable place, which is why I would like to introduce you to my friends at wisefoodstorage.com. Wisefoodstorage.com provides affordable, gourmet, ready-made meals for emergency preparedness with, get this everyone, Janice, Sam, 25-year shelf life. 25 years, baby. Woo! And what's even better than the 25-year shelf life is the fact that it tastes great, and all you need to do to prepare these meals is add water. They have entrees like pasta Alfredo, cheesy lasagna, savory stroganoff, as well as great-tasting breakfast, desserts, drinks, and snacks. Best of all, you don't have to take my word for it, although you should. You can try it for yourself and see. Go to wisefoodstorage.com or call 855-827-WISE and request a free sample today. Again, that's wisefoodstorage.com or 855-827-WISE. In addition, for a limited time, you can enter the promo code COFFEE to get 10% off and free shipping and your free sample. That's wisefoodstorage.com or 855-827-WISE. And be sure to mention the promo code COFFEE for the free sample and the free shipping. Be wise, be ready with wisefoodstorage.com. They are sponsoring today's episode. And so anyway, break. Right? Had to go on vacation. Had to get right. Okay. Get my life in order. Sometimes, you know, as we were saying in the studio here just a few minutes ago with Sam and Janice, sometimes you got to take a step back and relax and look at your life objectively and start focusing on the great things that you got going on. If you're under duress or you have some adversity coming up, had a lot of loss over the last few months in terms of, you know, just my grandmother, 96 years old, you know, the icon of the family. And one interesting fact about my grandmother, I mentioned it, you know, last month when, you know, she passed away, but we had a very unique situation where before she passed away, we were actually able to get a photograph of five generations of women in our family. And that is a pretty rare thing. When you can get five generations in one photo, and it happened just before she passed away. So that's a special thing that we've got with our family that you don't really you know, see very often. But you know, between that and, you know, I had to put down Tommy Lee. Talked about that before. He had cancer, and that was probably the toughest thing that I've had to go through, man. Because, like, when you have a pet, you know, the thing about Tommy Lee was that he was with me all those years when I was going through a lot of different things. You know, Tommy outlasted, you know, what, three long-term girlfriends, and he outlasted my coaching career. I mean, the dude outlasted everything. And when I first resigned from the University of Toledo years ago, after, you know, the big scandal and whatever, it was actually Tommy Lee that made the trip with me here to New York and to when I first started to try to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And, you know, I was contemplating going to acting and et cetera, et cetera. And so he was always that rock, you know what I mean? So then when we had to put him down, you know, it was tough. My mom and I took him in, and you know, I don't think I've ever cried that hard. Maybe when I was like a newborn. Well, I'm sure that I cried that much because I'm sure that I was not the easiest baby in the world. Always wanting to be the center of attention. That didn't just happen when I was an adult, right? I mean, that came from somewhere else. But anyway, you know, I it was good to get away. Got a lot of great things happening. Matter of fact, yesterday I helped Dan Slotchy, who is the writer and director of Family Business, which is my first starring role in the feature film that'll be out later this year. I helped him and his girlfriend move. Dude, let me tell you something about moving to New York, man. I had it lucky, right? Because I lived out of my car for a year and a half. So when I actually made the move to Long Island, I mean, it's almost like, for me, it was like finding another parking space pretty much, you know, but I hate moving. I hate moving. You know, the entire process of packing, unpacking, none of that excites me. Obviously, the prospect of having to lift things and, you know, sweat bullets. But what's worse in New York is there's nowhere to park. You know, there's nowhere to park. But you got to park. You know, you got to park in somewhere that's going to be relatively convenient because, I mean, it's a moving truck, you know. So the other thing about New York when you move is, and this happens in everywhere in the world, but like, you know, for some reason it's more of a big deal here in the city. Everything's a walk-up, you know, everything. Matter of fact, people don't normally use that term outside of big cities. They don't say, well, it's a fifth floor walk-up, which means there's no elevator for those people that don't live here and don't use that term. So him and his girlfriend were moving from a third floor walk-up to a second floor walk-up in Bushwick. So it wasn't that far of a drive, you know, from where they were in Brooklyn. But, man, I'm telling you, first of all, you know, these buildings were built, you know, over 100 years ago, some of these buildings. So the stairwells that you're actually walking up are tiny. To the point where, you almost need a civil engineering degree to figure out how to get, like, a couch. Getting it down is... it's hard enough as it is, but obviously you have one big thing working in your favor, which is gravity. Okay, so you're going to get it down one way or the other. The worst is getting it up. Okay, and I'm telling you, man, dude, between having to find a place that was close enough to the apartment for us to move everything in terms of parking the U-Haul, loading the U-Haul, finding another place in Bushwick to, you know, that where we could park that was close to the apartment, and then moving everything up to the second floor. And, you know, the stairwells always wind in cities like this. There isn't like this big, broad stairwell to take you to the next level, which you would maybe find in apartment buildings in other places. But here, I mean, these buildings have been here forever. And so moving in New York is an art form, man. And shockingly, we were able to get it done. And get it done in a relatively timely manner. I was about ready to pay him, though, to burn the couch. I was literally going through the math in my head, like, you know what, I mean, I'm volunteering my time, but I swear to you, I would pay $100 for him to buy another more convenient couch or futon or something rather than transport. It was one of those old Lazy Boys with the real metal, you know. And oh dude, I'm telling you, man, it was brutal, but we got it done, man. We got it done. But the great thing is, you know, we had time to visit. We don't get to see each other much, which is such a weird thing that you only experience in big cities where, like, somebody literally lives 2 miles from you, and you never see them. You never see. And what a lot of people don't understand about New York City is, even simply getting to the east side of Manhattan, if you live on the west side, is a chore. I mean, it will take you just to get from the west. So we're here at West 72nd Street, which means you're on the west side of Central Park. Okay, and so to get to East 72nd Street, not so easy. Well, there might be a cross street. Is there a cross street across at 72nd? 65th Street. At 65th Street. So close enough. But that's if you got a car, or if you want to walk. But the reality is, you need to take the subway, which means you got to go down to Times Square and take the shuttle across and then you got to grab the 4, 5, or 6 and go up, I believe. Or take the bus. Man, I never take the bus, though, man. Dude, I got this big thing about the bus. And we went over this in a broadcast before where I took the mega bus and loved it, right? But I was so traumatized years ago by taking the Greyhound all the way to Myrtle Beach that I won't even get on a city bus, man. Although it is convenient, a lot more convenient than taking the subway all the way down around. But that's the thing about New York, you know, you won't see anybody for like a year, you know. So Dan and I got together, and the great thing is, the great news about family business is that he's actually right on the verge of what we call pitcher lock, which means that it's done, it's ready. And aside from color correction and sound correction, which is kind of like an art form in and of itself, and blows your mind that, like, they made movies so amazingly back at a time where that wasn't possible. There was no sound or color correction. It was what it was. You know what I mean? Well, of course, back in the day, it was black and white anyway. But, you know, there was no sound correction to it, you know? So, in any event, it's going to go through that. And then it's ready to, you know, hit the festival circuit and hopefully, eventually, ultimately land in movie theaters or on TV or Netflix or wherever it's going to land. But we're going to have the cast viewing, private screening here in like another week, and I'm going to be able to see the movie for the first time. I haven't seen it. You know, I mean, I've seen the actual raw footage from scenes, you know, while we were filming it. We would each night kind of take a look. But I have no idea what it's going to turn out to be. And that's why a lot of actors don't, you know, like Johnny Depp, he doesn't watch any of his movies because it's out of his hands, you know. And so he's just, you know, I do my job and I kind of know what the gist is and hopefully it turns out well. But, you know, I think they look at it as frustrating because the movie, how they are portrayed in the movie and how their acting comes across is really out of their hands at that point, and it's completely in the hands of the editor, you know? And I don't think that they like that. I don't really care one way or the other, I'll be honest with you. I just want to see it, you know? But in any event, we're going to be back here in a couple of minutes. Got a lot to go over today on today's episode. So tune in here, or stay with us here, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. I'm Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 on Talk Radio Network Stations and TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Talk Radio Network stations around the country. And this particular segment of the show is sponsored by MG and the Bod. That's our original program you can find only on CoffeeTalkRadio.com. So if you go to CoffeeTalkRadio.com/football, that's MG and the Bod, and they are, hey, man, if you like football, NFL, right, and if you like Italians, and who doesn't, right, you need to be watching MG and the Bod. Those two guys are incredibly funny and entertaining, but incredibly well-versed, and, you know, they've got their thumb on the pulse of what's happening in the NFL, so you want to go and check that out, CoffeeTalkRadio.com/football. So a lot happening this week, right? Well, lots been happening in the last month since I've been gone, but one of the things, the biggest news for me over the course of the last week here has really kind of come to fruition here just in the last couple of days, and that is the discovery of possible wreckage from Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 that disappeared like 500 days ago. Okay, and unless you're living in a cave somewhere, you know what plane we're talking about. The plane that literally just disappeared off of the map. Now, this is interesting about, this is not the first time that something like this has happened. There was another flight that had disappeared, I want to say it was about 10 years ago, and it disappeared off the coast of South America, the northern coast of South America. The plane disappeared. They had no, they knew that it went into the ocean, but there was no wreckage. There was nothing, you know, no floating suitcases and everything else. Until 2 years later, all of a sudden, something washed up, and then they were able to figure out where the plane actually went down, and they were able to retrieve a lot of it. Of course, it's the ocean, so, you know. But same scenario here. Now, obviously, at the time at which we are broadcasting right now, live, they don't know if this wreckage is from Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. But what they have verified, the NTSB and Boeing, which was the manufacturer of the plane, as well as the Malaysian government and the French government, is that this section of wing is what they found that is called a flaperon. Okay, this section, and it was a big, I don't know if you saw it on the news, it's a huge chunk. Okay, it was about maybe 8 feet tall, and it took several people to carry this thing, 8 feet tall and about probably 5 or even 6 feet wide, and covered in barnacles, and it washed up ashore on an aptly named island called Reunion Island. Okay, and it's a French island that's located in the western part of the Indian Ocean. Okay, we're talking, I'm venturing a guess here, but thousands of miles from where this plane took off, and even where they thought that the plane had actually potentially gone down. But what they are saying is that for sure this section of flaperon is from a Boeing 777. They know for a fact that it came from a Boeing 777. And the Boeing, which is the aircraft that disappeared from Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. And what they also have indicated is that, to their knowledge, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 is the only Boeing 777 that has gone down in the Indian Ocean. Okay, to their knowledge. And when they say that, I was thinking to myself, like, well, how would you not know? You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like, why are you even saying, like, to our knowledge, it's the only one? But it's not like you wouldn't know that another 777 went down, right? So anyway, this thing, it's washed up ashore. And now several other things have kind of washed up that they've been looking at today. Yesterday, there was a big chunk of metal with some Chinese writing on it. They think that it may have something to do, twisted metal, of course. There has been some possible pieces of what looks to be like a suitcase that have been washing up. And now they're also directing, there's another island that's located about 110 miles northeast of Reunion Island, and they're going to be searching there. It's amazing to me, you know, everything happens for a reason, man. You know, I was thinking this back when it went down. I always kind of felt like, you know, we may not find this thing right now, but I have a hard time thinking we're never going to find it, because this isn't like the 1800s or the 1700s when a ship goes down in the Bermuda Triangle and you never see it again. Well, of course you never see it again. The world's population at that time was like, what, a tenth of what it is now? It's not like every coastal area has been inhabited back then as it is now. And so there's currents and there's tides. And a lot of these pieces, particularly of an airplane, they float. You know, even if it's metal, it floats. I mean, a ship is metal. It floats. You know, there's buoyancy there in certain things. And obviously this thing had some sort of buoyancy to it that it was able to, you know, travel thousands of miles and collect barnacles and everything else. And another interesting thing they said today is that they may be able to tell simply by examining this chunk of Flaperon if this broke apart in midair or if this broke apart when it hit the water, meaning maybe an explosion in the air tore it apart or it broke apart when it hit the water. And they think that they may be able to tell that simply by examining it. Like, science, man, is just blows my mind. One of my best friends from college is a forensic pathologist, which, man, if I had the smarts, right, which I don't, the discipline, which I barely have, that's what I would love to do, because I love kind of like deductive reasoning. I love kind of figuring things out and by deducing what can or can't happen and kind of making your way to the answer to things. And so I always kind of felt like I would be really a great lawyer because I'm really full of crap, right? Or I would be a great forensic pathologist. But, you know, it's amazing, you know, what they're going to be able to figure out just from this one chunk. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there's going to be some sort of closure. But the problem is, obviously, it's only a few pieces. And to really find out what happened to the plane, I mean, obviously, we already know that the plane crashed. I mean, it wasn't like it just disappeared. To our knowledge, aliens didn't come, abduct it, take it, could it, well, hey, I'm not saying that's impossible because we all have our theories, right? But the likelihood of that kind of happening is probably not so high. So we already know that it crashed. So, you know, by finding the wreckage isn't really telling us anything we don't already know. They really got to try and locate, you know, where the black box is. And that's the only way that they're going to be able to tell at this stage. But it's amazing to me. Like I said, fate and the universe and karma and the way everything works out, there's no way it was going to go undetected for the rest of time because there's too much stuff in that plane, even if it was sitting on the bottom of the ocean, that eventually things will rust out and things that can float will make their way to the surface. And it's kind of like message in a bottle. You know, you throw a message in the bottle, and then you hear about this all the time, right? Where a message in a bottle will wash up ashore in Cape Cod that 10 years ago was thrown into the ocean by some 8-year-old kid in Florida. I mean, things eventually will be found, you know, and because that's the way that life works, man. It's karma. So that's going to be an interesting thing for us to follow here in the next week is Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. Another big thing that I wanted to talk about today was this whole thing with the lion being killed over in Zimbabwe. And I wanted to talk about it on a couple of levels. A of all, just talk about what happened here. B of all, I'm a hunter, but I'm also an animal lover. And so I kind of have a unique, well, to be clear, and I think a lot of people miss the boat on this, most hunters are animal lovers. Okay, hunting to an avid hunter, unless you're somebody that is unethical, which clearly we're dealing with that in this situation, but a real hunter hunts not just for the game of it, but because we're part of the food chain, they're part of the food chain, we just happen to be more advanced than they are, and you know you hunt to eat. I actually love venison, right? I love elk meat, you know, and I like the challenge of having to try to acquire that on my own, okay? Within the context of the laws that are laid out, you know, hunting laws are designed here in the United States to be in the favor of the animal, Okay, it's not like hunting is it. For those people that don't hunt, they think, oh, it's so easy. You just go in the woods and you got a gun. How hard can it be? Dude, it's really hard, man. Or otherwise, everybody would always get an animal when they go hunting. That's just not how it works. The laws are designed so that you have to find a balance between maintaining a certain population of whatever animal it is, particularly like deer in the United States. You don't ever want to have this massive killing off of them where all of a sudden they become extinct or endangered. But you have to balance that out with the fact that, you know, people like venison and it's a great food source. And you have to cull the herd down, because otherwise they become overpopulated. That's when they go make their way into residential areas and become not just a nuisance, but potential danger, because that's when they're running out onto the highways because they're looking for food, you know, and causing accidents. You hit a deer, you hit a buck that weighs 180 pounds at 70 miles an hour in your car, nothing good is coming out of that, okay? Nothing good. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people are killed every year from that kind of thing. So ethically, it's not just ethical, but there's a moral obligation here to the planet that we need to be responsible in our hunting, okay? And so that's why we have laws. So what these guys are doing, and we'll talk about it here more when we come back from the break, but what these guys are doing, I don't consider that hunting, okay? That's not hunting. These guys are going out. They're paying $50,000 or more to go on these safaris where when they get there, they're actually put onto a property that is somehow sectioned off or cordoned off, which backs up to protected land, which is where these animals live. I mean, dude, this is not hunting, all right? This is basically just being the bully on the block, but in the worst possible way. And we're going to talk about this more when I come back here from the break. But I've got a really strong feeling about this, but there's a balance there. I don't take the PETA approach where, like, oh, these guys should be hanged. Obviously, I don't think that. Okay, but I do think that there's a moral obligation that we have to be ethical and responsible in our hunting. So I'll be back here in just a minute. I'm Kevin Barbro. You're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 on Talk Radio Network stations around the country and TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbro, and you're listening on Talk Radio Network stations around the country. And if you are just joining us here for the second half of the show, we are talking about right now the situation that's happened with the killing of the famous and human-friendly lion that in Zimbabwe. And so, you know, to fill people in, again, you've got to be living in a cave if you haven't heard this. But on July 1st, as most people have heard by now, American dentist Dr. Walter Palmer, this dude is from Minnesota. Now, I don't know where he's from now because this dude is invisible, man. I mean, I don't necessarily, I think that you make decisions in life. I've made decisions that have landed me in hot water before. And you got to suck it up, and you've got to. There are consequences, you know. The life is consequences, and like I had to deal with my consequences, you know. I stood up, dealt with them, moved on. Right. This dude went into hiding. Now, they basically, the animal rights activists and you don't have to be an animal rights activist to have a problem with what happened, but I mean, they basically forced the dude to shut down his dentist practice. He's shut down all his social media and he's kind of disappeared. Now, I don't necessarily think the guy's life should be ruined, you know, for doing this. But at the same time, there are consequences, and the Zimbabwe government wants to talk to the guy. I mean, he killed a lion that was protected, okay, and he needs to answer for that. And the U.S. Wildlife and Gaming Commissions, they want to talk to him about what happened. And if there's anything good that's going to come out of all this, and there always ends up being some good, is, first of all, it's drawing more attention to the practice of hunting endangered species, okay, or species that are, what's the other word? Not endangered, but protected, yeah. And so, you know, you've got, so it's going to draw more attention to that. And, excuse me. So what happened is this lion in Zimbabwe is by the name of Cecil. All right, Cecil, for all intents and purposes, is kind of like a celebrity in Zimbabwe. This is what's really drawn the attention to it. People go to the national forest where he was living, and they photograph him, and they take movies of him and things. And he's seemingly human-friendly. Now, he's still a lion, bro. Okay, but he doesn't necessarily have, like, this problem with humans. I mean, he doesn't attack the humans when they come, and they take photos of him, and it's almost like he's... shows off, you know, for him or whatever, or showed off, I should say, at this stage. And he had been tagged, and he had a GPS device that was located on his body so that they can watch his mating patterns and everything else, okay? So the dude is like a celebrity, you know? And this doctor, this Walter Palmer guy from Minnesota, he paid $50,000 to go on a safari, which he claims that he was just following the rules of the safari. He's putting the blame onto the people that ran the safari. So what happens is you go over there, and these safaris are run by people who own property that backs up to the national park. So it's private land next to protected land, which obviously, I mean, dude, it almost makes it too easy to hunt a lot of things, because obviously if your property backs up, there's a place in Ohio that I used to go and a hunt, okay? Now, it was public hunting land, and it was situated. There's not a lot of public land that you can hunt on, okay? But there was a place called the Maumee State Forest, which on one side was backed up to Maumee State Park. So you can't hunt in a park, okay? And then on the other side, there was a wildlife preserve, okay? But, which made it harder for humans to hunt things, there is a man-made ravine on either side of it that animals would literally have to cross the water, which they would do at sometimes, you know what I mean? But the state forest had its own ecosystem and had its own animals that lived in there, and they would kind of come and go, all right? what these guys do is they buy land next to a park because they know that these lions and elephants and leopards and other types of animals, they live in there. And this is what happened is this guy that owns the safari went in at night. They know this for a fact, him and his buddies. They took a carcass of another animal, like an aardvark or, they don't have deer over there, but something along those lines, you know what I mean, a smaller animal. And they tied it to the back of a truck or whatever, and they lured the lion out of the park onto their property. The doctor claims he didn't know that that was going on. But it's like, come on, man, you're paying 50 G's. You know, what do you think that you're going to pay $50,000 and not get a lion? Right? So they lure it into the park. He shoots it with a bow and arrow. They track it. When he gets to it, he kills it with a gun, finishes it off, and then he field dresses it. Now, I don't know the particular ins and outs of field dressing something the size of a lion, but I have gone elk hunting before. When you go deer hunting, it by law, you have to field dress the animal, meaning that by law, you have to gut the animal, okay, right there where you shot it. First of all, because you're going to eat the meat, you can't have the animal, because as soon as it's dead, it's going to start to decay, okay? So you have to field dress it there. But then with deer, you have to actually take the whole deer with you to a state-regulated station, a check-in station, where they're going to tag that deer, okay? You have a temporary tag with your name that you had to purchase from the state of wherever you're hunting from, and that temporary tag then becomes a metal tag, a real tag with a serial number on it that is stapled to the that's kind of put through like an earring through the ear of the deer, okay? And so you can't just show up with a head of a deer because they want to know where the body was. You can't just show up with a body because they want to know where the head came from. They want to know that you legally obtained this deer, whether it's male or female, etc. That's how they kind of control it, and they control how many are going to be killed. So when you go elk hunting, which is a much bigger animal, okay, you have to show up with the head of the animal. They don't expect you to bring the entire elk there, but you do have to show up with the head because the head is going to indicate whether it was male or female, okay? And so they can kind of control the herd. So the fact that the lion was beheaded, if this is part of the process, I mean, I really don't have a problem with that fact. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's when you tell the story, it's sensationalized. Well, he cut the lion's head off. Well, that wouldn't be, that's not actually something that's out of the realm of normal hunting if you're hunting ethically and morally and by the law, because there are animals that are so big that you do have to take the head to the state authorities to prove that it was a male or a female. So that part, I don't really have a problem with. The fact that it was gutted and skinned, I don't have a problem with that because that happens in real life also. The problem is you're paying $50,000 to hunt something that you are pretty much guaranteed you're going to kill. That's not hunting. Okay, you're guaranteed that you're going to get it, right? And the fact that they're going to guarantee that you're going to get this lion, a lion, where do you think that these lions are going to come from? It's not like some surprise when you arrive there, and this property backs up to a protected national park. There's no way he didn't know that, okay? You don't have to be you don't have to be a doctor, right, to figure out how this is all going to go down, okay? Now, what makes it worse for this dude is this guy has already been arrested. He's already been fined for poaching a bear here in America, okay? He poached a bear. He killed a bear out of season, okay? That's what poaching is. Or you kill it at a time of day that you're not allowed to be hunting, which would be nighttime if for most animals. You know, the thing about hunting in America, the ethical part of hunting is that seasons for animals revolve around the mating season for those animals. What they want to do is they make it so that the season for hunting is at a time of the year because most animals go into heat at the same time. They become pregnant at the same time of the year, which means that all of the fawns are born at a particular time of the year. And then what they want to do is they want to have no hunting until the time at which those baby animals are old enough to be able to survive without their mother. That's an ethical, moral obligation we have to the earth to make sure that this happens, I think, okay? And this guy's already proven that he's killed something out of a season. So he doesn't really care. That what he's saying right there at that point, I don't care what the rules are. I'm going to do whatever I want because look at me and look at how much of a man, right, that I am, that I'm going to go out and I'm going to kill these giant animals. Well, he's not so much of a man now, right, because he's not manning up and just coming forward and just take responsibility. You know, you screwed up. You know, a lot of people screw up. You know, you didn't kill another human, at least, you know. But, you know, you got to man up and show up. The other problem is that, stunningly, in Zimbabwe, this is not he's not the first doctor in the last few months that has done this. There's another doctor, a second American doctor, according to the New York Times, Jan, with a male's name, Jan Sisecki, okay, from Pennsylvania. This person is like an oncologist, okay? Same deal. Went to Zimbabwe, also illegally, according to the Zimbabwe government, illegally killed an African lion that was led out of the national park with bait and killed by one of these people that owns a safari. So when I was saying that some good is going to happen out of all of this, we're going to talk about here when we come back from the break, but basically both men paid almost the same amount of money to do the same exact thing, including right down to hunting it with a bow and arrow, you know, which I don't have a problem. You know, people, you know, they're talking about, it's like, well, the animal had to stop. Well, you know, we've hunted with bow and arrows for longer than we hunted with guns, let's be honest. You know, so hunting something and then tracking it, you know, that's a normal part of hunting. Matter of fact, even when you hunt in the United States and you hunt deer or elk, or wild boar, whatever it is, even if you shot it with a gun, doesn't mean it dies instantly. A lot of times you may have to track it for miles, and sometimes you may have to track it to the next day, okay? But in any event, we're going to finish up talking about this when we come back from the break. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Coffee Talk 3.0 on Talk Radio Network stations and TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Dude. Transforming Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com. It's the Dudes of Disruption.
The Dudes of Disruption is a new show geared toward the global tribe of disruptors who are committed to interrupting the automatic ways of their lives so they go out and leave their mark on the world powerfully.
Consider every Tuesday night, 8 to 9 Eastern on TalkingAlternative.com, forever disrupted. The Dudes of Disruption, disrupting your automatic.
Dude.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everyone, to the final segment here of Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening to Talk Radio Network stations around the country. And we're wrapping up our discussion about the killing of the lions illegally in Zimbabwe that's happened over the course of the last month. You have two separate doctors, one a dentist, one an oncologist. The dentist from Minnesota, Dr. Walter Palmer, who's since disappeared, and Dr. Jan Sesecki, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, from the oncologist from Pennsylvania, both have been identified by the Zimbabwe government as having poached lions on what they claim as though they thought that they were on a legal hunt for the lions, and they've put the blame onto the people that have run these safaris. And we've been talking about the fact that I'm a hunter. I'm an avid hunter. I'm an avid fisherman. And I just, to me, I don't see the lure of hunting these particular types of animals. Animals that you're not going to eat yourself. I don't get that. You know, I know that I have friends that go on and they fish for fun. When you fish for fun, you actually throw the fish back in and it's still alive. Okay, so I kind of get that. I don't get hunting something that you yourself are not going to eat. I don't get hunting, particularly if it's something that's endangered or at least a protected species, like apparently lions or leopards or elephants. You know, there's already a shortage of them, and we have to, you know, they how we treat animals on this planet says a lot about us as humans, and we have an obligation. I'm not a PETA person, okay? Although I do donate every month to Greenpeace because I do see value, and I don't necessarily agree with their extreme measures in doing things, but I do agree with the fact that we should be doing what we can to help preserve animals that can't fight for themselves. I totally get that. And I'm a hunter, okay? I don't see the lure of hunting something like we were talking on the break, how other big game hunters are complaining that they're not being singled out. And we're talking about people that hunt giraffes. It's like, okay, you might as well hunt cats. I mean, the giraffe to me is like the most docile. I mean, we don't hunt horses. Right, I mean, it's like a giant horse to me. It's an animal that is, it's not a part of your food chain, man. What are you doing? You know, there are other animals out there that I feel as though, there are animals even here in America, right? The number one thing. Now, I haven't gone on a hunt for this before. I would actually love to go on a hunt for this particular type of animal, which is a wild boar. Now, there are pockets of the United States, particularly like in Ohio, in densely forested areas, you know, very rural areas, where you have an overpopulation of wild boar, and they breed out in the woods. Now, these animals are dangerous. Okay, a wild boar, when you come across a wild boar as a human, it doesn't like you. Okay, it's going to do everything it can to protect itself against you, and they gore you with their tusks, you know. And so but if I were to kill a wild boar, I would want the meat for it. I mean, I would like to hunt it. As a hunter, I would like the challenge of it, because again, all of the laws that revolve around hunting it are slanted towards the animal. You can only hunt it during the day. The thing is nocturnal. Okay, it makes things a little bit difficult, you know. But and they're in usually very rugged areas and whatnot. So I would like the sport of it, but at the same time, I would like to have the meat from it, because you're going to get a tremendous amount of pork out of that thing, you know, you kill one of these wild boars. But anyway, getting back to the Zimbabwe thing and wrapping it up, the good that's going to happen out of all this, and which has already started happening, is it's drawing attention to the hunting practices of these big game hunters that go over there from America and other countries like Great Britain and whatnot. Developed countries, these people pay $50,000 or more to go to a underdeveloped country, a third world country, only to hunt these big game, and it's not much of an actual hunt. So the Zimbabwe government has shut down all hunting of lions, leopards, and elephants within the area surrounding the national park, okay, which is a great thing. they're launching a massive investigation into the practices of these different, because it's obvious that they're luring these animals out. And so, and actually, I mean, the country's so poor, they don't have enough money to feed their own people. And now they got to launch this giant investigation. So they're asking for people to donate. And if you go on the internet, if you want to do such a thing, you can go on the internet and you can figure out how to do that. I didn't take the time to do that, but you can. They're asking for donations for people to donate to that goes straight to their environmental agency to try and figure out how to handle all of this. And here in the United States, they're actually, right now, they're going to start implementing, or they want to start implementing laws that ban the shipping of these trophies to the United States. If it's an endangered species or if it's a protected species, you should not be able to bring the carcass back here only to have it mounted in your living room. You should not be able to do that. You know, it's kind of along the same, you know, when we first had the embargo against Cuba, right? You could be tried for treason for actually going to Cuba and purchasing something and bringing it back. That's why you couldn't get a Cuban cigar, you know? That's why your passport couldn't be stamped with a by showing that you went there unless you had a valid educational reason for going to Cuba, until now, obviously. But it should be the same thing. I think that it would be easy for them to be able to at least put a stop to the shipping of... It shouldn't be legal. I guess that's what I'm getting at. It should not be legal. And that's another good thing that's going to come out of this as well. But, you know, the whole thing with this particular lion, the fact that it was famous and the fact that it was kind of friendly towards humans, I think that was the kicker there. And it's almost, you know, you hate to say it, but it's almost better that it was that lion. If that makes any sense, because had it just been a regular one, maybe nobody would have cared as much, because this other doctor, nobody really cared about the lion that it killed. It had no name. This had a name. It was kind of humanized, you know, it had a human name. His name was Cecil, for God's sakes. How many bad Cecils do you know? None. So anyway, the last thing I wanted to talk about today, man, which is from the world of athletics. I don't know if you guys watch this. I don't think you guys end up watching, but Ultimate Fighting, you know, and they've got this women's division of Ultimate Fighting, and they had UFC fight number 190 was on the other night, okay? There's a woman, the bantamweight, which is 135-pound weight class, okay? Ronda Rousey, okay? And she's becoming incredibly, like, mainstream famous. A of all, she's appeared as an actress in she appeared in Entourage and in a couple other movies or TV shows, okay? And she's beautiful, and she kind of calls it like she sees it. She doesn't pull any punches, you know what I mean? And the big thing that happened was they were fighting. She was fighting this woman from Brazil, and this woman, Beth Correa, okay? And she was the number one contender. And now what happened was, what brought this to everyone's attention, Ronda Rousey, who's the champion, when she was 8 years old, her father committed suicide, okay? And that's what actually got her into the sport. And at the last fight that this other woman had, Beth Correa, okay, when she fought, after she beat the woman that she beat, she kind of, to the camera, made this gesture. Now, she speaks Portuguese. She's from Brazil. But she made this gesture to the camera. She put her fingers up, counting, like, to, I think it was to the number four, and then she put one finger down, and she was mocking the champion, Ronda Rousey, about the fact that one of her family members had killed himself. And I don't even know what twisted planet you come from that you would openly mock somebody who has a family member that had committed suicide. But and there was no mistaking it. Like, she doesn't make any apologies for this, right? And she even made the comment in one interview. She said to Ronda Rousey, who wasn't there, obviously, that don't cry because your dad killed himself. I mean, this is like the twisted planet that this woman lives on, right? So everybody wanted to see this fight at this stage because, I mean, this became a huge deal, okay? And Ronda Rousey had just won the ESPY for the top fighter in the world, okay, over Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather, who has been arrested for domestic violence. And so she made the comment when she got it. asking Floyd how it feels now to be beaten by a woman, right? Because this woman doesn't care, right? This woman don't care at all. And so anyway, the fight goes on. She knocks this woman out. I'm telling you, in 34 seconds, she knocked the woman out in 34 seconds. But I mean, it's a violent sport. I mean, it's not for everybody. I mean, it's real fighting. It's not like boxing or anything else. Like, it's real women duking it out. She knocked her out in 34 seconds. But the funny thing that's happened out of this whole thing, if you go on the internet and you look at the memes and the GIFs, you know, the GIFs of the people have, you know, taken like the footage of from Star Wars, you know, with the big four-legged things, and they get shot down and they slowly land, you know, with their head down and their butt in the air, because that's kind of the awkward angle that she landed in. Was like she was knocked out and her head was on the mat and her butt was in the air. And it, the funniest one that I saw was actually like this little baby that was sitting on a couch and it fell asleep and it landed face down. You know, it's just, it's hilarious. But I'm telling you, man, this woman is unbelievable. They say that she may be the most dominant athlete of any sport ever. Now, I don't know about that because there's not a lot of women in, you know, Ultimate Fighting, but I will say she's only spent 64 seconds of time in her last three fights. It's unbelievable. So anyway, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week here on this station for Coffee Talk 3.0. I'm Kevin Barbro, and you were listening to Talk Radio Network Stations and TalkingAlternative.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.